The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I am Avra Lewis with the North Carolina Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Essence Magazine. The first article is from BlackEnterprise.com and is titled Venus Williams Set to Become Oldest Woman to Compete in Australian Open Main Draw. Venus Williams is poised to make Australian Open history next month, becoming the oldest woman ever to compete in the tennis tournament's main draw after receiving a wild card entry from organizers, according to the LA Times. When the Australian Open begins January 18th in Melbourne, Williams will be 45 years, 7 months, and 1 day old, surpassing the previous age record held by Japan's Kimiko, who was 44 years old when she appeared in the 2015 tournament, where she exited in the first round. The upcoming appearance will mark Williams' 22nd time competing at the Australian Open, where she owns a career record of 54 wins and 21 losses. She made her debut at the event in 1998, advancing to the quarterfinals after defeating her youngest sister Serena Williams before falling to Lindsay Davenport. I am excited to be back in Australia and looking forward to competing during the Australian Open, she said in a statement. I've had so many incredible memories there, and I am grateful for the opportunity to return to a place that has meant so much to my career. Although she has never captured a singles title in Melbourne, she reached the final twice, losing to Serena Williams in both 2003 and 2017 championship matches. Her success at the tournament extends beyond singles play. Alongside Serena, Venus claimed 4 Australian Open doubles titles between 2001 and 2010. And she also won the mixed doubles crown in 1998 with Justin. Williams' return to elite competition follows a gradual comeback after an extended break from singles play. In July, she won her first singles match in 16 months at the DC Open, defeating 23-year-old Peyton Stearns. That victory made her the second oldest woman to win a tour-level singles match, trailing only Martina, who accomplished the feat at age 47. Following that match, Williams shared a personal milestone, revealing her engagement to Danish actor and model Andrea Pretti. "Yes, my fiancé is here, and he really encouraged me to keep playing," she said at the time. "There were so many times where I just wanted to coast and kind of chill." Williams and Pretti were married last month in Florida. Williams also enjoyed a strong doubles run at the U.S. Open last summer, partnering with 22-year-old Leila Fernandez. The duo reached the quarterfinals without dropping a set before being eliminated by Taylor Townsend and Katrina. Ahead of the Australian Open, Williams is scheduled to tune up at the ASB Classic in Auckland and the Hobart International, continuing a career that has defied expectations and redefined longevity in women's tennis. The next article is titled Birkins Over Bitcoin. Is the smart money in designer accessories with authenticity as the gold standard? Luxury bags are no longer mere status symbols. They are key components of long-term wealth strategies. Carrie Bradshaw, the fictitious main character in Sex and the City, summed it up best. I like my money where I can see it, hanging in my closet. While the iconic series lacked black talent, its perspective on fashion as a form of currency has stood the test of time. Once considered a frivolous purchase, luxury handbags have quietly become savvy investments for many black women. An Hermès Birkin or a Chanel Classic 11.12 flat bag can do more than upgrade your outfit. If you do your homework and choose wisely, they can outperform some stocks and cryptocurrencies. Numbers don't lie. The data is striking. Black Americans collectively wield tremendous spending power, estimated at $2 trillion annually in the U.S., while specific data on luxury resale as it relates to black women isn't available. Luxury shopping among that demographic seems to have surged, at least according to what's trending on social media. Nielsen data reports that black women outspend other groups in multiple categories, and this influence extends to the secondhand luxury market. Vintage and resale in particular have taken off. According to a census-wide survey commissioned by e-commerce platform Whatnot, 41% of consumers choose purchasing luxury handbags over contributing to their 401k. Entrepreneurs like Liberian-American Telfar Clemens, whose namesake brands Vegan Leather, Bushwick Birkin, bags sell out instantly and appreciate in value, underscore this shift. Even vintage pieces like early 2000s Dior Saddles or Chloe Patagons are fetching multiples of their original retail price on resale sites. And fueled by private Facebook groups like Black Girls Love Luxe and Mod Luxe Lounge, black women, both buyers and sellers, are at the center of this booming industry. Many of them recognize that these accessories offer a kind of cultural capital and increasingly a financial one as well. What makes a bag a good investment? When we asked about the critical elements that make a good investment purchase, we received a crash course from trusted luxury reseller, The Real Real. Authenticity is key, Hunter Thompson, director of authentication at the company, explains. We examine key details like logo stamps, date codes, stitching, and hardware, all of which are unique to each brand and model, he says. For high-value pieces, we also use tools like X-ray imaging and precision scanning to inspect internal construction and materials that aren't visible from the outside. Our proprietary image analysis technology vision allows us to access things like leather texture and embossing at a microscopic level. That scrutiny pays off. A well-authenticated Birkin can double in its retail value in 5 years, far outpacing common stock indexes. Demand is the real driver, especially for timeless designs. When a heritage brand reissues a beloved style, interest in the original version often surges, says a Real Real spokesperson. After Chloe's iconic Paddington was reintroduced on the fall 2025 runway, searches for the early 2000s, its bag jumped 54% in 1 week. scarcity in the form of limited releases, special order colors, and unique hardware creates further upward pressure. And this is where Black women shoppers turned investors often excel. We are known to identify trends and spot under the radar designers early, be it snapping up Telfar shopping bags before they went mainstream or recognizing that a metallic Fendi baguette would appreciate faster than Bitcoin. When it comes to luxury shopping, we put our money where it matters, more than just a logo. Beyond the big names, subtle factors determine a handbag's value. Iconic brand signatures like distinctive logos and hardware matter. A Real spokesperson explains, materials matter too. High quality craftsmanship and signature leathers not only wear well over time, but also hold their value. Limited production runs, whether from niche designers or heritage houses, can drive long-term demand, especially when tied to exclusivity or cultural relevance. New wealth strategies for the curious collector. Increasingly, Black women are not just wearing these bags, they are leveraging them as part of a long-term financial plan. For many, this is about more than conspicuous consumption. Buying designer handbags is one of my favorite wealth-building strategies, says Ashley Robinson, senior luxury consignment executive at The Real Real. The most important rule is to educate yourself and do your research. Shop with reputable sources where authentication is taken seriously. Hermès, Chanel, and Louis Vuitton consistently hold their value and top every collector's wish list. As Robinson points out, starting with iconic brands and a realistic budget can make all the difference. Take your time and enjoy the process, she says. Who knew your handbag habit could actually be a smart investment? Smart money, smarter style. While stocks, real estate, and cryptocurrencies remain traditional routes to building wealth, luxury handbags, especially those sourced and resold with care, are turning out to be more than fleeting indulgences. Whether purchased for passion or profit, Birkins, baguettes, and other collectible bags continue to rise on discerning shopping lists. And nowhere is that truer than among Black women making their mark in this evolving market. The next article is titled, Wayans is Him. Our brother on the big screen shares his thoughts on art, family, and his unwavering sense of purpose. God put me here for a reason, and I'm going to fulfill that. The world is watching Marlon Wayans. That's been true for a while. On May 20th, 1999, the Wayans brothers aired its final episode, but even after the 5 seasons of laughs and unforgettable moments, plus a return by the Temptones that rivaled any musical group out there, the iconic sitcom wasn't afforded a proper send-off. Though disheartening, its abrupt cancellation wasn't uncommon, especially for television shows that featured Black talent. For Wayans, one of the show's writers and its co-star, this wasn't a door closing. It served as a window, providing access to endless possibilities. You know what's funny? He says, when I express my disdain for the show's premature end some 26 years ago. I am happy it's happened that way. It just created an opportunity for me and my brother to do a great movie, the final episode. And when we do our weigh-ins, brother, special, I'm not going to sit around and just talk about the nostalgia of the show. We're going to do the last episode. That is the essence of Marlon Wayans, always seeing life's trials, tribulations, and obstacles as an opportunity to create something new, something beautiful for the world to experience. This mindset began in him at an early age. It was cultivated within the walls of his family unit in New York City's Fulton Projects. As the youngest of 10 siblings and a member of the heralded Wayans clan, Marlon was always an observer, building on the foundation that was laid before him, but never afraid to forge his own path. I got to watch what they did right and assess what they could have done better, he explains. But I think in order to become a trailblazer yourself, you can't just follow footsteps. You have to create your own. I've been fortunate to watch so much success and be a part of so much success, and to understand that there is no failure, and at the end of the day, there's no real bad choice. God's going to lead you exactly where you need to be. Sometimes there's choice A and choice B. Choice B is just taking you the long route. Choice A may be the shortcut. Either way it goes, that journey is between you and God, but you are going to get to where you're going as long as you don't give up. Resilience is Wayne's central theme on the path to mental, physical, and emotional prosperity. It has also been pivotal in the success of this talented multi-finite. He has led shows like Funniest Wins and his self-titled sitcom, and he has left his stamp on a bevy of notable works such as In Living Color, White Chicks, and G.I. Joe, The Rise of Cobra. The demand for Marlon Wayans is as high as ever. What exactly is he planning on doing next? Well, whatever he wants. Wayans has been in the entertainment industry for 35 years and around it his entire life. So for humility to be one of his most prominent character traits says a lot about how he was brought up. Unless you have been under a rock, you have probably seen Wayans' commanding presence on Drink Champs or his introspection while chatting with Jennifer Hudson or his take on the importance of family alongside his brother, Damon, on the podcast IMO with Michelle Obama and Craig Robinson. In all of these conversations, he is talking about other people rather than himself, specifically his parents, Elvira and Howell Wayans, who passed in 2020 and 2023, respectively. For Wayans, it's always been important to honor the legacy of his mother and father, not just by his words, but by his actions. And you can fully understand the people his parents were by the person he is and how he carries himself. Your parents prepped you for certain moments in your life, and it's like, were you listening? He reflects. Did you really listen to their instruction? How do you show up after their passing? You either show up broken or you show up as a pillar with strength. And when my parents passed, I made it a point to show up like they raised me, with strength and resilience, and not as a broken baby, but as a man. In 2024, Good Grief, the actor delved deep into the trauma he felt regarding his parents' deaths and how laughter helped him navigate it. The show was filmed at the famed Apollo Theater. Wayans used it to help himself heal from the heartbreak, and he also showed millions how to use humor as a coping mechanism. He gave his late parents the greatest farewell possible in what many feel is his most vulnerable work to date. During our Zoom conversation, a moment of serendipity is arising. Hold on one second. Wayans says before briefly walking off camera, "Be a good girl. I love you. I'll see you later today, okay?" Wayans himself, now a father of three who is working from home that day, pauses to speak with his two-year-old daughter. Amid all the accolades, the accomplishments, and the demanding lifestyle, Wayans is a dad first and foremost. Though beautiful, that unexpected interaction also gives a glimpse into the challenges that come with parenthood. It's an appropriate metaphor for the circle of life. Wayans has discussed his upcoming stand-up special, Somewhere Under the Rainbow, for quite some time. It was birthed from the dynamic between him and his transgender child, Kai. Parenting Kai, Wayans says, really changed his outlook on life and what it means to love. "I'm a different human being than I would ever have been because of this experience," he states. "I'm a different comedian, I'm a different artist, and I'm a different writer. I used to always ask people to love me unconditionally, but I didn't know the task that I was giving them until my child taught me the true meaning of unconditional love, and that gives me such peace." Since 2018, the entertainer has released 5 stand-up specials, 4 of them in consecutive years, a rare feat compared with the typical comic's output. Most take 2, even 3 years to put together a solid hour, but Wayans is just different. Ironically, the craft of stand-up is something he picked up later in life, but as with most things he has tried, he embraced the challenge. "I wanted to be better, and I wanted to grow," he says. "I think that's why my career has been so long. I am 35 years in the game, and people still haven't seen the best me yet." In a time when instant gratification and overnight success are what people strive for, Wayans is much more focused on the process. With each new special, film, and project, people are going to see a better, more evolved version of him. You'll see the progression of an artist, a stand-up, a comedian, an actor, a writer, a producer, and a storyteller, he notes, and you're going to see it in my work, all of my work. "These are my best years, and I really feel like this is the age where superstardom happens." In him, Wayans' star continues to rise with his portrayal of Isaiah White, a legendary quarterback whose time on the field is almost up, but who won't step down until he finds a protege willing to do whatever it takes to win. Produced by Jordan Peele's Monkey Paw imprint, the film puts Wayans in a light we've never seen before, yet it's a space he sits in comfortably. While he may be known for his comedic prowess, his previous performances, such as in Requiem for a Dream and Respect, show the actor's underrated versatility. "He transformed completely," says Justin Tipping, HIMSS director, about Wayans' mindset while filming. He really set the tone on set. He would make it a point to shake everyone's hand and speak to everyone on the crew. It was like, yes, we are making a movie, but also this is a family. His example made everyone else want to deliver the best product possible. Marlon was such a consummate professional. It made me say, man, now I've got to step up my game to make sure I'm on point as a director. Although Wayans' on-screen persona has taken a bit of a dramatic turn in recent years, he is, along with his brothers, set to helm the scary movie franchise once again. It's been about 25 years since the Wayans family has been involved due to bad business, Wayans notes, but not on my part. Fans can expect to see a return to prominence for this beloved comedy series. I think the world needs it, and everything is divine timing, Wayans says of Scary Movie 6. We all need a big laugh. This world is so toxic, and we are going to use this to get people laughing again. At the time of this interview, Wayans had celebrated his 53rd birthday a few days prior. While talking about the blessing of turning a year older, a year wiser, I marvel at the passion he has in his voice and the conviction that he still has in his purpose. What keeps you motivated at this point? I ask. I love what I do. It's my calling, Wayans responds. God put me here for a reason, and I'm going to fulfill it. The bigger I become in my art, the more of a megaphone I can have for what I'm really trying to give back to the world, which is joy, love, laughter, and healing. Through it all, Wayans never loses sight of what and who he does it for. I am always inspired because I remember how proud my mother was when I did my art, he says. Remembering that smile inspires me every day. The first person I made laugh was my mama. So, every time I make the audience laugh, I hear my mama. Every time I tell a joke, I hear my mama. Every time I do a great performance, I hear my mother clapping. That was beautiful work, baby boy. I just want to make her proud because I know she's watching. Well, we have run out of time for today's episode of Essence. We hope you enjoyed it and be sure to listen next time. I am Aver Lewis, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Essence is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.